All right, well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, once again, hello. This is another edition of Radio Free Kafiristan. This, of course, is a radio program dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam. Here, we examine the evidence for both of these faiths in order to arrive at the truth that leads us to this end. Thus goeth I. Shalom, peace, and blessings. Of course, this is your humble host, Eric Thekifer, coming to you live from the depths of the cavernous cave in Dar al-Harb, Kafiristan. We are here every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 p.m. Central Standard Time, and I'm not exactly sure what time it is out west this time of year, but it is at least an hour behind us. And in Jerusalem right now, it is 1 a.m. If you're in Jerusalem listening to the show, go to bed. You can listen to it tomorrow in podcast. The former host to this show, as a matter of fact, a gentleman by the name of Damon Rosen, worked for Tom Trento out of the United West, made Aliyah to Israel a number of years ago, and he still lives there today. As a matter of fact, for the United West, he was doing some spots for Tom when the Israelis were coming under attacks from the Gaza Strip from the Palestinians. Great reporter. Okay, as you can see, we are live streaming here on StreamYard. We're going to our two Facebook pages, which are Radio Free Kafiristan, of course, across the Crescent Discussion Group, and we are live streaming here on YouTube. And it looks like we got a good crowd here on YouTube already. I was looking at that before the show, and holy cow. All the Darcy's here, X, Y, and Z, and Y Huffs, Simpio U. I don't know what I've seen you here before, I believe. Thank you for coming. And let's see here. There's a couple people here before I even got into Hoop Bloop. Now, that's quite the name. I think it's better than that name, that guy that came in, what day was that? Well, Sunday show, called himself the Bomb. I call him Ant Dog Droppings is what I've kind of, I went and I looked at his YouTube page. He was giving me this big line of, you know, you only have 200 and I don't even know how many subscribers I have, 250 or so, somewhere around there. And yet you've been on YouTube for how many years now? And which is fair. I mean, that, but you know, if my goal was to try to get nothing but subscribers, like, oh, I don't know, some imam out of Houston who has 10,000 subscribers and gets about just as many views as I do on YouTube. I mean, if you want to really do the math, who's actually paying attention to who is saying what? That's, I would think that would be a better metric. But anyway, if you want to know, if you want to know what a kafir is, you can go to the new Encyclopedia of Islam, because a kafir is someone who does not heed the beliefs and prescriptions held by the religion of Islam. And that's why we call this Kafiristan and Radio Free Kafiristan. Okay, tonight we're going to be doing kind of a spoof. Let me just be forthright about this. There was and D.L. Tate, I don't see D.L. in chat, not right now anyway. Maybe he is. Let me take a look over here. D.L. sent me a message on, I believe it was Skype, and said, and this was Saturday night he sent this, and it was a link to Kenny Bomer's show. And so I clicked on it and opened it up, and they were talking about the Israeli-Palestinian issue just at that specific time. The title of the show was 40 Great Hadiths, and they were talking about great hadiths, obviously. Well, just as soon as I tune in, he starts talking about terrorism and what a terrorist state Israel is and all the bad things, and then I type something into chat, and then almost immediately – he starts attacking me, and I'm in his chat for crying out loud. He starts in on these attacks, and they didn't stop. And after about maybe 3 minutes, I get banned in chat. Now, sure, if the mods here, Dragon, maybe you could tell me. Dragon's, what? You're a mod. I don't understand why this is not. Oh, yeah. Okay, here we go. Dragon and Darcy, I got you guys as mods, XYZ. I mean, do you guys ever ban anybody in chat? Type that in there and let me know, because I don't think we've ever kicked anybody off of this show. I don't mind people speaking their mind, even especially if they don't agree. Well, even if they don't agree with the people on this show, it isn't really that big of a deal. But evidently, the thin-skinned one, it is a big deal to him. Anyway, so this show is called 40 Great Hadiths. But I don't think it's the type of hadiths that they were going to discuss or wanted to discuss on the show or their show the other evening. So tonight we're going to focus on these hadiths that I think that everybody should be aware of. Because if Muhammad was indeed this great man and principled man that who set a pattern of conduct for everybody to follow, well, we should know a little bit about him, and we should know a little bit about that pattern of conduct. So what I'm going to do here is I am going to share my screen with the audience. If you're listening on Blog Talk Radio, you can't see this. That's why you need to go to the chat room and click on the link to come to the YouTube live stream. You can see it from there. This information is plagiarized. Right up front, I want to give attribution to Dr. J. Smith. This is part of a slideshow that he used during a course of instruction from a course that I took from him this past spring. And I just pulled out some important things that we need to know when looking at the ahadith, which is plural. You can't say hadiths. It's ahadith. John Isaac can correct me on that if I am wrong, but it's ahadith. And what I want to do is I want to lay a basis from where do these come from? Where do we get these hadith? If they were supposed to, you know, because if you look in the Quran, it only mentions Muhammad four times, for Pete's sake. So you don't know the pattern of conduct that Muhammad set and to follow just by going from the Quran. You can't even the Shahada, the five pillars of Islam, are not all in the Quran. You have to go to the hadith in order to determine what those are. So let's go ahead and look at some important dates here. Of course, Muhammad is born in 570 AD. He receives his first quote-unquote revelation from the angel Gabriel in the Hira cave right outside of Mecca in 610, that place that did not exist, but let's play a game and pretend that it did exist in 610. And then from there, you have these revelations when he lived in Mecca, very peaceful revelations from 610 to 622 for about a 12-year period. But then he gets himself in a little trouble in Mecca and has to make a hijra to – oh, wait, what's this? Five prayers? I don't care. He makes a hijra from Mecca to Medina. He has to escape in the middle of the night because he – was speaking out against the pagan gods in Mecca, so they essentially chased him out of town. So he goes to Medina, or what was called Yathrib at the time. And then from 622 to 632, he receives the Medinan revelations. Now, these Medinan revelations, quote-unquote, notice I'm using quote-unquote because I don't believe they're revelations at all, but let's just pretend, play along, that he did receive these. These are very different from the Meccan revelations. They're much longer. They're much more violent. They are much more when you talk about religious supremacy, that they take on that aura of religious supremacy. In 630, he conquers Mecca, and then in 632, he'd be dead because he got poisoned. Everybody thinks it – well, not everybody, but many people think he died of poisoning because of – it's a long story. Let's get away from that. Then you have the first caliph, Abu Bakr, lived for – 2 years and then died. Now, out of the first four caliphs, he's the only one that wasn't murdered. Religion of peace for you. And then you have Umar, famous for the Pact of Umar, where he forced subjugation on everybody that he encountered and conquered. And then you have Uthman, who compiled the Quran. It's where we have the Uthman recension in 651. And then Ali, the nephew, I believe he was, of Muhammad, he becomes caliph after the death of Uthman, and he himself is killed. And this is where you have the Sunni-Shia split right here with Ali. Now, let's move a little bit forward and put this on a timeline. We can see where Muhammad is born, and you can see here on the timeline where he gets his first first revelation, then you see where he makes Hijra, and then you see where he conquers Mecca, and then you have him dying in 632. So you have it nice and neat here on the timeline. It's easy to follow. This is easy. I mean, when I'm a kind of a visual person, when I see it like this, it makes it a lot easier to follow. Then you have Abu Bakr, then you have Umar, then you have Uthman, and then you have the compilation under Uthman. Oh, 652. I thought it was 651. Oh, no big deal. Only a year off. You have the compilation of the Quran by Uthman, and then all of the source material that Uthman had to compile the Quran, he perfectly preserved for everybody, and we still have manuscripts. Okay, that was Steve. Sorry, Steve. I had to mute you. He must have left just so we didn't hear him. He burned it all. So we don't have any of the original. So whenever they say, well, we have the original Quran. Well, how do you? Because we all know that Uthman burned it. And then Ali dies in 661. Okay, so when we look at this classical account of who wrote what when, outside of the Quran, you have even Ishaq, who is the biographer for Muhammad, writing down, let's see, that's 765. So let's do the math there. I don't know. That's 133 years after he died. But we don't have any manuscript evidence from that. Nobody has any manuscript evidence from Ibn Ishaq. What we have is an edited version of this from Ibn Hisham, who lived 200 years after Muhammad. And that is called the Siratul Rasula Allah, the biography of Muhammad. And then you have the greatest compiler of hadith, which is the sayings and actions of Muhammad. And that is Al-Bukhari. And he lives, 238 years after Muhammad. That's a long time if you're trying to accurately determine when these things were written down. And then you have Al-Tabari, who was a commentator on the Quran, one of the greatest, they call him the greatest tafsir. That's what the commentary are called. Okay, so Muhammad dies 632. You have the biography of Muhammad clear out here in 760 under Ibn Ishaq, but then you don't have the first edition of that until 833. And then you have the hadith. That's clear out here in 870 AD, 240 years after the death of Muhammad. These hadith are compiled. Now, when I say compiled and written down, that is an important thing to understand because we don't have any of those first copies. We do not have any extant hadith until 400 years. I believe it's 400 years after the death of Muhammad is the earliest copy of hadith that we have. Then you have Sahih Muslim, who is another, but the second only to Bukhari in compiling a hadith. Then you have Ibn Majah, Abu Dawud, Al-Nisa. So you have all of these other people compiling hadith. And then you have, of course, the writing of the Tafsir, which is Al-Tabari, the commentary on the Quran, and the Takrir, which is like the history. So if you look at this, the first biography of Muhammad isn't written for 200 years. You get it some more. You have let me go back here. Okay, so you can see here you have these different kingdoms arising. You have Al-Malik, who is one of the famous caliphs, and then you have the changing of the Umayyads to the Abbasids. And let's compare this to George Washington. I teach American history, and George Washington's kind of an important figure in American history, is only the father of our country. But let's just say George Washington was born in 632. Let's just say, okay, let's pretend George Washington was born in 632. The earliest material or reference we would have to George Washington would not be until 690, 60 years after he lived. 60 years after the first reference to him does not appear for 60 years after he lived. And then we don't have the first story written down. His biography isn't written down until, let's say he was born in 1776. We don't get his first biography until after the bicentennial, for crying out loud, until 1977. And then we don't get to hear his speeches, his hadith, until 5 years ago when we elected Donald Trump. And then we're not going to get his history or anybody commenting on what he has to say or the takhrif until 40 years from now. So can't you, the reason why I brought this up is I wanted to make sure that you understood the time frame here from when Muhammad lived to when we actually get these hadiths. It's absolutely ridiculous. And yet we're supposed to trust these hadith as being genuine comments, genuine sayings, genuine actions that Muhammad had done. We're supposed to believe that, and we're supposed to accept that. Why? Because there's a science behind hadith. So-and-so said, so-and-so said, so-and-so said. You know, they have a chain of narrators. What do they call them? Isnads or something along those lines. But we're supposed to trust those, don't you see? Not something that somebody writes down, but we're supposed to trust the oral traditions just fine. I don't think so. Then you also have the problem of distance and direction. Now, if you look here, the Islamic traditions say everything happened in Mecca, which nobody can demonstrate Mecca existed in the 7th century. There is no, and when I say there's no evidence for that, I say absolutely it's for this, which is scary. You have an entire faith system that, an entire faith system of over 1.6 billion people that is completely contingent upon the existence of Mecca in the 7th century. Because if the Mecca does not exist in the 7th century, this is all house of cards. It's all going to come flowing down. So let's look at where these hadiths were written. If you look at the traditions, they're written down in 1800 miles north. Ibn Hisham, the biographer, this is in Basra, Iraq. This is southeastern Iraq. And Hisham grows up in Cairo. So you look at the distance here, and this is 1,600 kilometers. That's about 900 miles is about how far that is for us Westerners here. But people in Canada, I guess 900 kilometers works out just perfectly fine in your heads. But let's look at Basra. Basra is in 1,800 kilometers. Now look at Bukhari. Look how far Bukhari, the most trusted compiler of hadith, 4,200 kilometers. That's over 2,000 miles away. This guy lives, and he's compiling the hadith. Al-Tabari, the commentary on that, he's from Tabaristan. How far is that? That's 2,800 kilometers. That's 1,500 miles or so. These huge distances. So not only do you have the separation of time, but you also have the separation of distances. So when we conclude all this, we cannot tell me that all of these things hold water. Let's just put it that way. Okay, so what I want to do is I want to go over several hadith. I don't want to go over 40 hadith tonight because it would probably bore you to death and you'd be tuning out and going someplace else. But we are going to discuss some hadith. Now, before I let Chris Claus come on, because Chris has some hadiths that probably would not have been on Kenny Bomer's show the other night. I highly doubt that I would have heard that. Even on part two, I don't think they would have brought some of these hadiths up.
Hey, these are probably the most inspirational hadiths that a Muslim would ever quote, I bet.
Okay, I'm going to get to you, Chris. Give me 2 minutes here, because this first one is, if you think for a second that the Quran was revealed to Muhammad by Gabriel, Angel Gabriel, I would have to say you're a fool. And here's why. Let's look at this hadith here. Look at this hadith. This is Sahih Bukhari, and it's also in Sahih Muslim. And this is a story about determining whether or not Muhammad is a prophet or not. So let's read through this. This is narrated Anas. When Abdullah bin Salam heard the arrival of the prophet at Medina, he came to him and said, I'm going to ask you three questions or three things which nobody except a prophet knows. So he's going to ask Muhammad three things that only a prophet would know. Now, the first question that comes to my mind when I read this, okay, so if you know these three things that only a prophet would know, that would also make you, yes, that also make you a prophet, would it not? Nod your head, yes, yeah, that makes perfectly sense, Kaffir. All right, so number one, what is the first portent of the hour? Meaning, how's the world going to end? What will be the first meal taken by the people of paradise? And number three, why does a child resemble its father? And why does it resemble its maternal uncle? Now, listen to what Allah does here, or Muhammad says here. Allah's apostle said, Gabriel has just now told me the answers. Okay, so this is the same angel. This is Sahih. This is Sahih Hadith. You ask the same, yeah, this is simple stuff. And why they don't ask this question themselves, I have no idea. Gabriel has just told me their answers. So the same Gabriel that is going to give Muhammad the answers to these three questions that only a prophet would know is as follows. Abdullah said, he, Gabriel, from amongst all the angels, is the enemy of the Jews. So first thing they got to do, let's throw some anti-Semitism in here just to make sure that everybody's on the same page. Can't have them Jews being believed at all. Allah's apostle said the first portent of the hour will be fire that will bring together the people from the east to the west. Okay, how do we know that? Well, we don't. Literally, we don't. We don't know how the world's going to end. Secondly, the first meal of the people of paradise will be the extra lobe, caudate lobe, of fish liver. Okay, now we know he's definitely not a prophet because nobody would eat fish liver. Nobody likes liver. But let's just pretend along. Let's just pretend. Okay, so, but we don't know because you'd have to be in paradise in order to know what you're going to eat as soon as you get to paradise. Because if you're not in paradise, you don't know what you're going to eat. So let's pretend. Okay. This guy's a prophet indeed. But, look at here. As for the resemblance of the child to its parents, this is why we know Muhammad is not a prophet and he's full of crap. As for the resemblance of a child to its parents, if a man has sexual intercourse with his wife and gets discharged first, the child will resemble the father. And if the woman gets discharged first, forget the fact that women don't get discharged, but let's just play along, the child will resemble her. Now, this last part can be clearly demonstrated to be false because we know this has nothing to do with who gets, quote unquote, discharged first. And we know it has everything to do with genetics. So when we start evaluating, whether or not Muhammad was a prophet, just evaluating whether the Quran indeed came from some angel sock puppet Gabriel, or just evaluating the accuracy of any of this where we can actually test it, we can clearly see that Muhammad's not a prophet and the hadith are not true. However, that's not our problem. The problem is, here's the problem. You have 1.6 billion people believe it. So if 1.6 billion people believe it, well, then let's just go ahead and go through some hadith that are really, really great. And now, Chris, that is your cue.
Right on. Allah knows best. All ham due to Allah. All ham due to Allah. And that's probably why. That's probably why the saying is all ham due to Allah, right? Because Allah's probably feasting on bacon sandwiches while all these Muslims are enjoying their fish liver for their first meal of paradise, of course, right? That would only make sense. Now, just pointing out the last hadith before we go into these oh-so-inspirational hadith of the greatest Islamic person in the world, Eric. In that question that you read, there was three points that you read. The third point, it does not even, I'm going to put it this way, the way that you read it, and I think the way it is, the word mother is not there. It says, why does a child resemble its father, and why does it resemble its maternal uncle?
Mm-hmm.
So, where's the mother in that one? It's not there, right?
Nope.
So basically, Muhammad didn't even answer the question. He punted that question, right? He had to have punted it. Because he couldn't have been like, well, maybe the dad could be the father, and maybe the dad could be the uncle. You never know. That's the way it was going on within the Islamic world, of course, right? So, but anyway, hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. Let's get ready for these oh-so-inspirational references of this wonderful person that Muslims think is so great, Muhammad. We'll go first with the from the Sahih collection of Al-Bukhari, Hadith number 2442, chapter 54, the book of gifts and their excellence. The one who gave gift to his friend and aiming for a time when he was with one of his wives rather than another. Muhammad stated, the revelation does not come to me when I'm in the garment of any other woman except Aisha. Follow that up with Sahih al-Bukhari, Hadith 2393. The title of the volume is The Grace and Its Virtues. The chapter title is actually What Was Granted to the Companions and the Wives. This is narrated by Ishmael, narrated by his brother, narrated by Suleiman, narrated by Hisham, and there's a whole long list. And when Muslims start quoting a bunch of Arabic names at the start of the Hadith, they always say it's Sahih. So, brother, it's Sahih. There's a bunch of Arabic names at the start of this. But anyway, let's keep going. And then it finally says, narrated by Aisha, who related to the wives of the Prophet, were divided into two groups. One group consisted of Aisha and Hafsa and Safiya and Swadada, while the other group consisted of Salama and the rest of the women that belonged to the Prophet. The Muslims had learned of the great love that the Prophet had for Aisha, so that if one of them had a gift he desired to give to the Prophet, he would delay giving it unto the Prophet came to Aisha's house. So if he had a gift, he would even hold it off until he came to Aisha's house. Then a group who sided with the Salama came to Salama and asked her to tell the Prophet that he should command the people that if any of them had a gift to give the Prophet, that they should give it to him whenever in whatever house his wives the Prophet was in at the time. So it shouldn't matter which house Muhammad is in, out of one of his wives, they should give it to him. The gift should be given to Muhammad at any point. Now,
they were told that they should only give it to him at
Isha's house. But it says, so Salam went and talked to the Prophet. He did not respond to her. When the group asked her what the Prophet said, she told them that he did not respond. So they asked her to go talk to him again until he responds. Then the Prophet said to her, do not hurt me with Aisha, for the inspiration does not come upon me when I am in any woman's garment except that of Aisha. And another one that you can quote, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll just reference, is Sahih al-Bukhari, number 3941. This is the Book of Virtues. The chapter title is The Virtues of Aisha. And in there, it does say, the inspiration did not descend on me while I was in the clothing of any other woman except Aisha.
Oh, hold on, Chris. Can I ask a question here?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so would the people in the LGBTQ, you know what I'm talking about, would they be now accepted as true Muslims?
Hey,
if you're...
Muhammad was the first alphabet group people. and his God loved it so much, he granted him revelation while he was cross-dressing. He was one of the first alphabet people. That's why the alphabet group people like him. Now, no other Muslim did, because they killed them after Muhammad died. But hey, teach their own. Teach their own, right? Whichever. I'm not going to jump upon anybody here. So let's just keep going, though, okay? All right. So, Hadith number 16245, the titles of the sayings of the Syrians, the chapter of the title is Hadith of Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan. I probably murdered that name, but again, these Arabic names will not do me any good. It says here, I saw the prophet, peace be upon him, sucking the tongue or the lips of Al-Hassan, the son of Ali. May the prayers of Allah be upon him, for no tongue or lip that the prophet sucked on will be tormented by hellfire. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine? Muhammad's like, if I suck your son's tongue or his lip or tongue will never reach hellfire. Could you imagine? And like, I could honestly see that there's probably tons, right, of loyal followers because, you know, Charles Manson, and there's always leaders, right? They follow him right to the death. So there was probably people at the time running their child to Muhammad being like, please suck on his tongue. I don't want my child to go to hellfire. Just suck on his tongue, please, Muhammad. Like, you could just see that happening, right? Oh, but you thought it was going to stop there, though, didn't you, Eric?
I was hoping it would, but go ahead.
I bet you thought he was going to stop there. But he, the prophet, lifted up Al-Hassan's shirt, and he kissed his little manhood. That is as far as I'm going to go with saying that word. But he kissed the manhood of this little boy. Again. I just don't understand these parts.
Why wasn't this on Kenny's show the other night?
That these are supposed to be the inspirational ahadith of their great prophet, right? The greatest man in their religion that ever lived, the tongue-sucking, manhood of little boys kissing. Pedophile. I'm just calling it the way it is, right? But anyway, let's keep going here. And even if you don't like that one, it was another hadith by Majma' al-Zawad Ali ibn Abu Bakr al-Hathami. And we got some words there, and it says, I saw the messenger of Allah, peace be upon him, pulling Hassan's legs apart and kissing his manhood. Related by Al-Tabari, and its authentication is fully validated by Islamic scholars.
This is just absolutely task, is there some type of cultural norm or precedence for this that anybody is as anybody? Steve's in the audience. John's in the audience, or here in the panel. Do you guys know of any type of cultural practice that includes this?
Yeah, back in the day, there was these people, Eric. They were called disgusting individuals. That's all Muhammad was. He was a disgusting individual. That's all I got to say.
Okay, well, none of them replied, so I'm assuming that there wasn't. Steve, do you have something? Here, go ahead. Let me unmute you, Steve. Have you heard this before?
Well, I've heard it before, but yeah, I know it happened. Just let me just say that.
Okay, what do Muslims do with this? I mean, was this shared before? What do you do? Your prophet was kissing the little wee wee of Junior here.
Well, you know, I think that you guys, one thing, I think you guys are just doing things, you're being really super negative. You know, that this was really love. And you guys just, you know, I wish you just would stop, you know.
why is he the hate in it, people? It's just Muhammad trying to love on that little boy. He didn't want him to enter hellfire.
And his own daughter. He really loved his own daughter. You know, between her breasts, and you know, and there was, I think you're probably going to bring the one about where he kisses up the guy's chest and down the guy's chest too. He just loved people, okay? So anyway.
Oh, I appreciate that perspective. Well, that is a perspective. I mean, you know, it's better than what you know, we're sitting here listening, listening here. Oh my gosh. Rad, did you have something to add to this? Because I'm almost scared to hear what you were going to say. Okay. Okay, Tred, you're in the crowd. He's in some place crowded right now. Yeah, go ahead, Steve. Yeah.
Hey, Eric, I don't know if you guys probably already said this, but I just want to tell you that I've been doing programs with Father Zechariah. I did last week and this week.
I watched last week's. Yeah.
The King of Saudi Arabia saying more than 99% of the hadith are going in the trash. They're going to disappear. Al-Azhar University, which is the Sunni Vatican.
Right.
They're saying, you know what? I think that might be a good idea. It's because of stuff like this. So.
Yeah, well...
And something about Al-Azhar. Al-Azhar, 2 years ago, said 80% of Islam is hadith. Now they changed their way of speech. They said, okay, because Muhammad ibn Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, ordered them to, or said that we will remove a lot of hadith. Now they said, okay, we will do that and remove a lot of hadith. They will make new Islam. They will change Islam for the money of Saudi Arabia.
Okay, so this is what we're going to be seeing then, John, is what you're saying is some type of reformation within Islam?
Yes.
Is that what we can look for?
But look at the answer. 2 or 3 years ago, they said they can't touch hadith because 80% of Islam is hadith.
80%.
I've seen that. Bill Warner sets up a really good graph, and it talks, and he puts out the percentages of what part of the Quran is religious, what part of the Hadith are religious, what part of the Sirah is religious in nature, and he shows that I can't remember exactly what the number was, but that sounds exactly right, where the majority of the religious practices that we find within Islam itself come from the Hadith.
Now, I really did have one more inspirational Ahadith of the Islamic greatest person that ever lived here for a year. Now, we all know what a wonderful thing that child labor is now, right? It's just love for children, getting them out there working at a young age. You know, slave child labor is always invented by Muhammad and narrated by Anas bin Malik. Whenever Allah's apostle went to answer the call of nature, I, along with another boy, used to accompany him with a tumbler full of water, Hisham commented, so that he might wash his private parts with it. This can be found in Sahih al-Bukhari, Volume 1, Book 4, Number 152, 153, and 154. So, Muhammad just had to go to the bathroom, you know, had a couple little boys go with him, so that they would stand in front of him holding this bucket of water while Muhammad would wash himself after he was done. But, you know, teaching these children to work at a young age, right, Eric? Isn't that what that kind of looks like?
I'm sure he was not familiar with the child labor laws.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, it's even better. And here it says, narrated by Aisha. I used to wash the traces of his semen from his clothes of the prophet. He used to go for prayers while traces of the water were still on it. More of that wonderful, wonderful way of just showing young girls like that to get out there and start helping out around the house, right? Isn't that's just trying to be a little bit better for the family, right? Get in there and start washing that off. He still had traces of it on the way to his prayers. He wouldn't even wait for it to dry. Weird, huh?
That's just sick. It really is. You would think at some point in time, like when we find in the Sirah of Muhammad, even Ishaq wrote things that even Hisham edited out or had the sense to edit out. But yet still there are things in the Sirah that are very similar to this. So you would think that Bukhari or Muslim or, you know, Abu Dawud, I don't know, one of the compiler of the hadith would have figured out something or figured out a way to edit this stuff out, because this stuff is just completely, you know, when you start talking about the criteria of embarrassment to make it something authentic, you would think that, you know, if something is embarrassing that nobody would have written it down. This isn't even the criteria of embarrassment here. This is the criteria of disgust. And when they were doing the show the other night, they were talking about, oh, was salalam, like, how do you say that? Salama wala. Somebody knows how to say it better than I.
I try not even to say that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're saying they're right, and they're trying. What they're trying to do is they're trying to show respect to him. Whoa, somebody is. Yeah, I think Steve just came on. Steve, you got to shut down this window. You got two windows open on me, Steve. There you go. Thank you, brother. You would think that. Well, anyway. You would think. All right, so let's look at some other hadith. We were going to do 40. I don't know how many did you just do, Chris? Because
I did like four.
Four. Okay, so let me do a couple here. This is from Bukhari, and this is where we start looking at the hadith being the, you know, this is supposed to be the example for all mankind to follow. And here in Bukhari, volume 5, number 637, narrated Bureda, the Prophet sent Ali to Khalid to bring the kumis, one-fifth of the booty, and I hated Ali. Now, Khalid, and Ali's the nephew, and Khalid is one of Muhammad's greatest generals. Let's just put it that way. He's a great general for Muhammad. And they just won this battle, important battle. And he said, I said to Khalid, don't you see, i.e. Ali, when we reach the Prophet, when we reached the Prophet, I mentioned that to him. He said, oh, Bureda, do you hate Ali? I said, yes. He said, do you hate him for he deserves more than that from the kumas? So when you look at this hadith, Bureda hated Ali because he had taken a slave girl. Now, we start talking about slavery, and this is one of the things that always come up in that always comes up in discussions, especially with the Nation of Islam. You know, they hate the United States because the United States has the history of slavery in it. They hate white people because it was indeed white people that had enslaved people from Africa. And when you start mentioning slavery, you say, well, this is a white man's or a Christian, not white man's, a Christian phenomenon. Well, when we look at Islam itself, there is really no comparison of slavery. You know, one had 14 million slaves in the transatlantic slave trade, in the sub-Saharan trade, slaves sending slaves eastward into Arab countries, 29 million. Two out of every three going west to the Americas were male. Two out of every three going east to the Arab countries was female to serve in the harem. So let's make sure that we understand that slavery is sunnah. It was not banned by Muhammad. Number three, or I don't even know what number we're on now. Say Ibn Umar reported, this is Abu Dawood, number 2074. Ibn Umar reported the Prophet as saying, if a slave marries without permission of his master, his marriage is null and void. So here again, you have a hadith providing laws and regulations that we saw, that we see here in what we have in the South. We had slave codes in the South. If you look at in the South, in America, in slavery, the vow for marriage was until death or distance do us part. That was actually part of the marriage vow, where you could actually be sold away from your wife. And here you see the owner of the slave does not approve that marriage, he can nullify the marriage. Sahih Bukhari, number 52177, Allah's Apostle said, the hour will not be established until you fight with the Jews, and the stone behind which the Jew will be hiding will say, oh, Muslim, there's the Jew hiding behind me, so kill him. Little anti-Semitism there never hurt any Jew, now did it. And it's right there in your hadith. And I remember watching a video of this imam citing this citing this exact hadith when trying to get people all charged or jacked up in a mosque to go fight Jews. He pulls out a sword and he just, anyway. Let's see here. Let's talk about some relevant quotations. If Muhammad was supposed to be the greatest human being ever to live, and he married and lived with and had sex with a 9-year-old little girl when he was 54. Now, when we listen to Muslims make excuses for this, it's some of the most disgusting things that you can about imagine. I have engaged several people, not only in conversations, live conversations, about this specific event where Muhammad marries the daughter of his the first caliph, or his best friend, Abu Bakr, Aisha, when she's 9. Actually, they have she's betrothed to him when she's 6, but he'd consummate it when she's 9, and he was 54. Now, let me just say that again. She is 9 years old, and he is 54. But he suggests that you should give charity to the poor. But yet he's going home that night after he suggests to give charity to the poor. He's 54 and she's 9 years old, and he's going home to that. But he said that you should treat everybody equally. But yet she's 9 years old and he's 54. They say that he was the greatest example, always wanting to do good and treat your neighbor with empathy and help, you know. Greatest example, but she was 9 years old and he was 54. I want to make sure you understand this. When you are saying that this is the greatest man, greatest example to follow, she was 9 and he was 54. When you bring this up, when you bring this up, heads explode. How dare you? I mean, because what practice, we call this something here in the United States. We call this something here in Western civilization. It begins with a P and ends with pedophilia. Yes, you guys are geniuses. Pedophilia. My goodness, you guys are all over. Yes, pedophilia. People go to prison for this type of thing, not just for months, for years. You go to prison for years for doing this type of thing. As a matter of fact, prisons are sectioned off to keep the pedophiles from general population, because even the most hardened and violent of inmates and offenders cannot even stomach the idea of somebody doing that to a little child. They even know that it's wrong. So when you have a person who is supposed to be the standard of conduct for all time, or pattern of conduct for all time, doing this, you hear every excuse under the sun. Well, she was ready to be married. A girl who's 9 years old is ready to be married. She was much more intelligent than everybody around. A girl that's 9 years old has enough sense to know marriage really is. She was playing with dolls when she was taken into his house. Let's read a couple of these hadith. Let's look at the Quran. What does the Quran have to say about this? Well, if you go to chapter 65, verse 4, it says, "And those who no longer expect menstruation among your women," we're talking about divorce here. This is about divorce. "If you doubt, then their periods is 3 months." If you're going to divorce her, you have to wait 3 months after they have their period before you can divorce them. "And also for those who have not menstruated." Now, what does that mean? That means that little girls, prepubescent little girls, can be divorced according to the Quran. According to, not the Hadith, according to Allah, who gave this to Gabriel, who said that you resemble your dad if your dad had an orgasm first during sex. It's just, all right, let's keep going, though. Let's look at some of these hadiths. Sahih al-Bukhari narrated Hisham's father. Khadijah died 3 years before the Prophet departed to Medina. He stayed there for 2 years or so, and then he married Aisha when she was a girl of 6 years of age, and he consummated that marriage when she was 9 years old. according to Sahih Bukhari, number 6 here. And let me also say this. That time period from when she was 6 to the time where she was 9 years old, there's a fatwa. I can't remember which country it came from. Maybe you guys can help me out. But there was a fatwa discussing that Muhammad thighed Aisha. We're not going to get into the mechanics of that on the show, but he thighed Aisha during this time period. Say again.
In Arabic, it's called mufahida.
It's sick, is what it is. And I appreciate that, Steve. Yeah, in any language, it's sick and disgusting to think that a grown man would do this. Was it Egypt? Gedalia in the chat says it was in Egypt where this fatwa was. And that's why she lost her hair. Yeah, and I've heard that before. The reason why I talked about where her hair fell out was because she's being traumatized by this man, by what he's doing to her. She is so distraught. I can't believe that a grown man would be doing this. So we're going to move on because I can hardly stand this.
Hey, Eric.
Yeah.
I think also she couldn't believe that her parents would allow this. You know.
That's
her parents would do that to her. They're the ones who dropped her off at his house. So, you know, her mother's the one who took her off the swing. Her mother's the one that put the water on her face and said it's time to go meet your friend. You know, so the betrayal from everybody, and then to know that he's going to do this to you again tonight.
You just can't imagine it. I was on Facebook last night. I mentioned this before the show when we were talking with Issa. I ran across the Facebook page for a lady by the name of Annie Cyrus. Have you ever heard of her? Annie Cyrus. Okay, she's an Iranian girl who was married off at 12, 13 years old to some old scumbag who used to beat her senseless, broke several of her bones. She'd go to the judge, and the judge would say, well, you just need to go home and be a better wife and please your, you know, this is what happens. This is what happens under the Sharia. This is what, this is what the greatest example for all time has caused for people like her, for people that can tell their own stories for others to learn from. So when we learn these, I'm just going to skip all these. Let's just make sure that we know here's one where she said she was 18 years old when the prophet died. Okay. Now keep in mind, before he died, I believe he had, I don't know if it was a revelation or if there's a hadith that prohibits people from marrying the ex-wives of Muhammad. Is that in the Quran or is that a hadith?
I think it's in the Quran.
Say that again, John.
It's in Quran. It's a verse in Quran saying that wives of Muhammad are mothers of believers, and you can't marry your mother. Then even if he dies, no one can marry his wife.
And if you think about denying Aisha, an 18-year-old girl, I mean, a very young woman, the opportunity to actually have a full life, to enjoy life, is just unconscionable. To me, it is, anyway. I wouldn't think – I mean, you would want her to be – if you truly love that woman, you would want her to be happy. You wouldn't want her to go get married the next day, you know, while your body's still a little warm. But you would expect that she would – you would want her to have some type of decent life. Yes, Steve, go ahead.
Can I ask something here?
Okay, this is. I just want to read the verse for you. It's Quran 33:53. It says, "Nor is it right for you that you should annoy Allah's Messenger by coming." Anyway, that's a funny one, but or that you should marry his wives after him at any time. That's Surah 33, verse 53.
33:53. Yeah, I'm familiar with that verse because that's where it says the dinner guests need to go home early because Muhammad's too shy to tell you to, hey, get out of my house or come on time. You know, don't sit around and talk with me because I want to get back to. And then it's the same verse you're saying, it's the same verse that provides that prohibition Okay. So we need to be moving along here. Okay.
Can I add something here?
Yep. Go ahead.
The hadith of marriage of Muhammad with Aisha at 6 years old is hadith mutawatir. Mutawatir means there is like a lot of ways or chain of narrations from Aisha till Bukhari wrote it or Muslim or whatever. Then this hadith, we have the negotiation. It's true hadith, high hadith and mutawatir. On the other side, we find Muhammad in another hadith in Sunan Nasa'i. I'll put it in the chat. What happened is Abu Bakr asked Muhammad to marry Fatma, his daughter. And Muhammad refused. Why? Because Fatma is young and Abu Bakr is old. Then Muhammad say something, he didn't accept his young daughter to marry old man. While he is doing the opposite, which is called hypocrisy. Muhammad was hypocrite, saying something, doing the opposite. Not only in the case of Aisha and Fatma, his daughters, no. Even in war. In war, he has like a list of rules. They don't attack children. Don't kill old people. Don't burn trees. He did all these in his wars with the Jewish. He killed children in Jewish Bani Quraiza. He burned the trees of Bani Nadir. It's all written in Sira and Hadith. We find that in Islam many cases. Muhammad says something, and he's doing the opposite. Then when you ask a Muslim, what should you follow? He doesn't know. He can follow this way or the other way.
Well, one of the things that the duplicity that you have here, the hypocrisy that you see with, you know, the first one that comes to mind, of course, is the number of wives. You know, you can only have four, but I, you know, I'm Allah's apostle, and Allah says, you know, I've given these to you, and you, and also your slave girls, you know, your concubines, your right hand possesses them. That's okay too. You know, even though you promised your wife, you remember that little, I think that's in the Quran where he says, well, why are you denying what I have given to you, which your right hand possesses? Why are you promising your wives you're not going to commit adultery with? And it's just okay. Let's move on to a more cheerful hadith. Steve, I really want to be cheerful here. Is this a cheerful hadith, Steve? No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm just playing.
This is a very cheerful thing. About Aisha are all mutawatir. Well, those are the mutawatir are the only hadith that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia wants to keep, meaning that they're going to keep these. So
Okay, and this is where they're saying that they're going. This is the reformation they're going to go through. And you actually think that's going to happen? Don't you think there would be some type of a revolution or some type of civil war?
You know what? I think everybody's going, thank God! Woo-hoo! No more fingers cut off! Woo-hoo! I don't think anybody's going to fight for these things, man.
Okay, well, let's hope so. Let's hope so. Okay, let's go on to this next one, Sahih Bukhari, Volume 2, Number 12, 245, rated Abu Sayyid al-Khudri. The Prophet said, isn't the witness of a woman equal to half of that of a man? The woman said, yes. He said, this is because of the deficiency of the woman's mind. Now, this is after, you know, I was watching the Imam show the other night, and he had a woman on there that kept commenting on the hadith, interjecting all kinds of, interjecting things into the hadith that they were reading that, you know, paint, you know, Muhammad. I mean, if I was a Muslim and I was going to do a show, I would do the same thing. I would paint Muhammad in a good light. But then she starts adding to a lot of these things that simply weren't in the hadith. That's one thing that I noticed about that. But with this one here, I was wondering, well, why would Kenny have a woman on his show if you know, it's that half of a man. Why not have two women on the show, and then that way you could get both of them to confer on what should be said. If you're actually going to follow these Sahih Hadith that you claim are so great, it's sad. Okay, let's do this one. The prophet was asked whether it was permissible to attack the pagan warriors at night with the probability of exposing their women and children to danger. Now, look what it says here. I got to make this bigger. You guys can't see this. Doggone it, I should have done this before the show. All right. Sahih Bukhari, the prophet was asked, okay, exposing the women and children. The prophet replied, they, the women and children, are from them, the pagans. In this command, we find that Muhammad establishes that it's permissible. Listen to this. It's permissible to kill non-combatants in the process of killing a perceived enemy. And this is providing justification for many of the terror bombings. And I watched that live stream in astonishment of how they were lamenting about how Israel, when they were firing these rockets into Gaza, taking down these buildings, taking out these tunnels, how they're lamenting on how evil Israel is when it's causing collateral damage. And while listening to this, it's just absolutely disgusting. Because, number one, Israel notifies the people via a text message. They send you a text message. Could you imagine that? You're sitting there minding your own business. You get this text message, get out of your house. We're going to bomb it. IDF, sign the IDF. Are you going to leave? Oh, heck yeah. Because I've seen what the IDF is perfectly capable of doing, along with the Israeli Air Force. But that's not even what else they do. They take flashbangs, and I don't know if you guys have ever been exposed to a flashbang before, but they scare the Hades out of you because they're very loud, and you can feel the concussion from these things. So it's supposed to simulate a bomb is what they're supposed to do. They're dropping these flashbangs on the roofs of these buildings that they're going to blow up, saying, you need to get out of these buildings. We're going to blow them up. If you didn't get the text message, feel our love, baby. And they drop these things on there. Then they had the temerity complaining about how evil Israel was for causing these senseless deaths of these poor Palestinian people that didn't do anything. The fact that they would attack hospitals, the fact that they would attack schools, the fact that they would attack masjids, mosques, is just unconscionable. Forget the fact that these Katyusha rockets, these 6-foot-long rockets that they're firing into Israel are coming from those schools, those hospitals, from those mosques. They're firing from them and or storing them in them. Why would you do that? Why would you store rockets? Why would you fire rockets from these facilities knowing that there could be some type of repercussions? Where is the blame there? The fact was, is I saw no blame there. And it's absolutely disgusting is the word. I'm not going to bound on that anymore. Okay, here's a good one. 13. Allah's apostle says, I have been ordered to fight. Oops, hold on. This peaceful religion, this very peaceful religion. Here we go. I have been ordered to fight the people until they say none has the right to be worshipped but Allah. And if they say so, pray like our prayers, face our Qibla and slaughter as we slaughter, then their blood and property will be sacred to us and we will not interfere with them except legally. So as long as you say there's nobody that has a right to be worshipped but Allah, then you don't have to worry. But if you don't, what is Allah's apostle been ordered to do? Fight until they do this. Now, how can you work out this scenario that you fight only defensive wars in light of this hadith? Can anybody name a scenario where you would only be fighting a defensive war? Because this is what the point that's always made is as well. We can the admonishments or orders to fight are only in self-defense. Well, if I you know, I don't worship Allah. I would never worship Allah. So you would think that they would be wanting to fight me, wouldn't you? If I'm supposed to be fighting or following the pattern of conduct for of Muhammad. And here's what I find amazing is that when we look at the applications of these ahadith, you can see that they're being applied across the world today. It isn't just it's a saying or one of the I was listening to a podcast, I believe it was yesterday morning, where a person was lamenting the fact, well, in the Bible, it talks about, or maybe it was on his show, he was talking about bashing little kids' heads in and enslaving women and raping them and making them be married off and such. When I heard that, I'm thinking, okay, well, where do we see that happening today in the Christian world? Where do we see that happening today in the Jewish world? Do we see villages being taken over by Christians and the women being married off to the soldiers? Do we see Jews going out and grabbing children and bashing their heads against rocks in the name of Yahweh? I don't see that. I mean, if it has happened, you would think that would be on CNN for 6 months, or ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC. They would all have that on there for 6 months. Yes, rad. Yeah, that's actually I was never, well, as far as I know, I was never invited. And this is in this Rad's right here. Evidently, they were lamenting the fact that Chris Claus and I had came onto the show and were commenting in the chat, and that we were given some link to come on the StreamYard. They had given us a link. Well, I was only there for about 3 or 4 minutes because just as soon as I started commenting in the chat, he automatically started going on the attack, and then I kept commenting on the attacks, and then they banned me and kept me from posting. So if I'm not going to be able to post, I left. Well, I went back in and I watched the later part of it, and they said, well, we sent him the chat or the link, and I didn't see it. I didn't see it email. I didn't see it anywhere. Not the ones that we're citing this evening, no.
Oh, why not? This one's I'm rushing home to take my shit hot up. You know, these are beautiful, wonderful hadiths.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, raping women, child molesting, you know, marrying every woman that you can find, I mean, killing the copper. I mean, who would not want to join this religion? All the booty you can get, literally, real booty.
Yeah. Okay, well. No, well, what you need to do, Rad, is next time you come on, I want to hear the cry of the Isan, and the call of prayer when you come on next time. That's.
Rad, you don't want to hear some dude screwing a goat, man.
Okay. All right, brother, don't quit running them red lights. Okay, be careful now. All right. Always the color. The color comes from the red. You got to love that. Speaking of color, evidently the color is yellow here. We did this one night where we were talking about this. Let me enlarge it here so everybody can see it. Okay. Camel urine as medicine. This is some Bukhari and also Muslim. This is where we find this. And it says, narrated Anas, the climate of Medina did not suit some people. You know why it doesn't suit some people? Because it's 130 freaking degrees. That's why it doesn't suit some people in Medina and Mecca. I know this by experience. Not that I've ever been to Mecca because it's been ethnically cleansed. But it goes on to say, so the prophet ordered them to follow his shepherd, i.e. his camels, and drink their milk and their urine as a medicine. Okay, so when we... I don't have it. I would have to... Wait a second. I do have it. Okay, you're going to make me go look for it. This is true. All right, so while I'm doing this... I didn't think of it. And plus, I would have gone and gotten a glass of lemonade.
Right, right.
That's always classic.
Yeah, we gotta work.
All right. Okay. Steve, were you going to say something?
I like his background. Is he really on a motorcycle?
Yeah, he goes out and he rides. He's got a special headset. For this, and... you know, it's summer. He's out there kicking it in Chirac. Just be careful, Rad. Don't go down the wrong street. Oh, okay. So let's see, Gedalia. She referenced this in chat. I'm not sure what that was that she's referencing. Maybe what we were just talking about. But the fact of the matter is that if you're going to recommend that somebody drink camel urine, I'm going to call the CDC on you and ask Dr. Fauci to evaluate that, what you're thinking about. Now, based on the advice that he's been giving in this last year, maybe he's for it. I don't know, because, you know, maybe they're using that. Maybe that's where COVID came, the Wuhan lab. Yeah, he's going to D said, you need to be vaccinated. We need to check you with so camel urine. I'm looking at it. Okay, so this is okay. I'm trying to follow this. I'm not good. Okay, Jamal translation narrated the message. Okay, here we go. What was this it, Gadai? This is what you're talking about. I've been ordered to fight the people until they say la ha, la 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 yabba dabba dooba, and they say that their blood and wealth will be protected from me. Oh yeah, that's a great reference to 929. Yeah, very good. Thank you for is that purity and cure in prophets? Okay, maybe that wasn't it, but anyway, that's a great reference to 929, where it says that you have to pay the jizya and feel humiliated. And the jizya is protection money. They're going to protect you, don't you see? From who? Well, from them. That's kind of like the mob with a god is what it is. Okay, so don't be drinking camel urine. And if you've seen, there's a video that was made. I don't know when it was made, but there is some Farmer John or Farmer Abu out there in the middle of nowhere, falling behind camels, filling up a bucket with camel urine and drinking it, and then wiping it on his face and his hair. Now, evidently, there's some type of medicinal benefits of doing this. I'm not exactly sure what they ever would be or could ever be. Okay, maybe she wants me to copy this link. Let me see if I can copy the link out of the chat, Gedalia. I don't see how I can get it. Wait a second. It's hyperlinked here. All right, let me do this. Hold on. You guys got to slow down. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. When you go from one screen to the other on the live feed, it'll give you all of the links. It just takes a couple seconds to get to the bottom. So I need to go up here. Where she says, this is Suna Ukari. Say that again. What was that?
Who's Asana?
Asana? Asana's in chat. Asana is somebody to come on the program quite a bit. He's a Muslim from either Washington State or Oregon. He's a lot of posting on Facebook. The problem with Asana, the reason why he doesn't come on here is because he likes to filibuster a lot, create you know, just erroneous arguments, makes relevant points. So we just, you know, he can post all he wants in Facebook, and I love seeing those posts from him, because here's what it says. You guys love Hadith to no benefit. Well, now, hold on a second, Asana. Now, hold on. Let me go back here. Oh, sorry. I did this wrong. Now, if you go back up here, maybe you didn't see what I posted here. Let me go back up here. It says that the prophet said that ordered them to follow his shepherd and drink because the climate didn't suit them. So this is supposed to make them feel better. So I would think that there would at least be a benefit to his shepherd boys. I don't see why you would say that. Maybe it would. What about the benefit here? Where was that one? Prophet Rumor from pagans. No. Where was it? Where you could boss your wives around? Where you could say, look, you're deficient in your mentality. It takes two of you to meet the same, you know, mental capacity as me. Is that what you're talking about? I'm not following your line of thought there. Okay, here's a classic one, and I think maybe we'll just kind of end on this one. Let's see here. Narrated Abu Sayyid al-Khudri, the prophet asked the messenger of Allah, peace be upon him, can we perform ablution out of the well of Buddha, which is a well into which menstrual clothes, dead dogs, and stinking things were thrown? Now, I don't know why you would throw menstrual cloths and dead dogs into a well. That, I can't picture. What? I didn't hear you, Thrad. Okay. Hold on. Let's stay with that train of thought. All right, I'm going to mute you. Hold on. All right. So, and stinking things were thrown. Okay, great. He replied, "This is the messenger of Allah, Muhammad. Water is pure and is not defiled by anything." Okay. So, if you are at a well and you have a dead dog in the well, it's okay. It's okay to drink that water. If menstrual cloths are in there, water is not defiled, so don't be afraid to drink that water. And if other stinking things were thrown in there, make sure that you get a good old gulp of that stuff to wash whatever you might have in your throat down, because nothing makes water impure. Now, this, of course, is the messenger of God, who gets a lot of his knowledge from the angel Gabriel, especially how... Hey, I like your shirt. I love that shirt. Back in black. Okay, in chat we have. Sorry, Rad. I'm going to mute you. Chaos Hunter. Yes, you've been here before. Tell us about Christian hygiene practices too. I'm not sure well, Christian hygiene practices where they tell you to take the cover the water, wash your hands in running water or something. I think that's what we learned in the under the Levitical law. Anyway. Okay, so I'm going to just leave it at that for the night. Does anybody else have anything that they have a hadith that they want to bring up? Any at all? Because I did have a long laundry list for these that deal with, you know, slavery and violence and all the ones from Aisha. I just couldn't I couldn't stand reading those ones from Aisha. That's just so disgusting to me. That somebody that's 54, let me just say that again. They get their advice and their example to follow. A guy was 54 and he marries and consummates that marriage with a 9-year-old girl. Just to make sure everybody understands that and never, ever forgets that. Okay, if that is it, let me go ahead, Steve. No. Well, I saw something where go ahead and tell us, Steve. There's someone where the police were there and... Was that Sunday?
They wanted to protect the other people from her, you know, and so they arrested her. So anyway, London police are.
Yeah, I saw something. Jay and Chris had a live stream today, discussing that, and I was trying to watch that on the way home. I got it on my bat phone, and I'm sitting there trying to watch it, and I watching the road. It's not a very safe thing to do, so we got to be careful. But one thing I wanted to say on tonight Chris is going to do a live stream. If y'all want to go to his YouTube channel, I'm not exactly sure what time. I think it's at 7:00 Central Time, so that would be about 30 minutes from now. He'll be doing that live stream. Him and Rad are going to be. I think I'm getting invited too. I'll have to text him and find out if I'm still supposed to be coming or not. But what we're going to do is we're going to be discussing some of the things that. Because of what occurred Saturday evening on the Imam show, Chris and Rad wanted to say a couple things about that. And I wanted to bring up a couple of other things about what this pious, presumably pious Imam wants us to think about him and what he actually does. So that is going to be in about 30 minutes from now. It's not going to be on the cross. Thank you, Aaron, for bringing that up. It's not going to be on the Cross and Crescent. It's going to be on Chris Claus's YouTube channel. I'm fairly certain. Where are you going live, Cross and the Crescent? I'm not going live. It's going to be Chris Claus. This is going to be Chris Claus's gig.
Is there a way we can put a link in the chat? Can we be with the YouTube chat so people know where to go?
All right. Issa, quit making sense. Let me find Chris's YouTube channel. I don't know if he has. Let's see here. Show 40. Oh my goodness. Okay, here's his YouTube channel. Let me see if he's built it. He has not built the show yet, so you can go check it out. Let me come back over. I got windows open here. Go check it. About 7:00 here in about 30 minutes, I think when it's supposed to be. That's Chris's channel there that I just posted. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay, this channel. Okay, if you look there. All right, thank you. Why did it say Chris? That? Doggone it. Golly. Gonna scroll up. Trying to find that link that she posted. Where'd it go? There we are. Is that what is he built already, or is that his channel? So I got the Wheel of Death going. Sorry, folks. This just live here. When you get live stuff, that's just to his channel. So I click on that link. It'll take you to his channel. If it's not, then it'll be probably on the hour, the following hour, 3:00 Central Time. Okay, that is it. Thank you all for coming. Next week we might be doing a couple more hadith. I don't know. if anybody has any ideas, they can send them to me, email. Here, let me post my email here in the chat. Read my email. Oops, Eric. I read my email faithfully every morning. I'll have more time here shortly to read my email faithfully in the morning because school's going to be out for summer. That's right. Y'all a bunch of haters, just teachers for having our summers off. I don't care. I love my summers because I can read my email all day if I want to. All right. God bless y'all. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for your contributions and week on Radio Free Kyrgyzstan. God bless. Let me come over here to, all right, we'll see you, Issa. Let me come over here to Blog Radio there, Mr. Bill. I see you there. Thank you for coming tonight. We will see you soon. I'm going to call you here in a couple days because I want to ask you about your MRI. All right. God bless. We'll see you soon.